Oh, yeah, it's that music. It's that day of the week. If Bill Leff was here, he would say, greetings, everyone. Well, he might not say that, but he would say, welcome to the best day ever invented. It's Friday, and Bill Leff is not here. And you know why Bill Leff is not here. First of all, let me introduce to you Jimmy Mack.
Hello.
Thank you for sitting in for Bill.
Welcome to the best day ever invented.
I was actually to fill in for Bill today. I was trying to find someone who's most like Bill. And quite honestly, you and Bill have a lot of similarities.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do.
We both are little boys in men's bodies.
We have not grown up. We refuse to grow up.
You were Toys R Us kids.
Well, absolutely. And now that you bring that up, you know, how sad is it that an institution like that is going away?
Bill was pretty upset about it. And I mentioned every time we would drive past the Toys R Us.
Yeah.
Where was it?
There was one close to the Maywood area.
No, where was the one that every time we drove by with the kids, you would say something like, boys, that is the Toys R Us that I bought my first action figure.
And yes, which that's Niles.
Niles.
Yeah.
And which action figure was it?
It was R2-D2.
That was your first ever action figure?
Yeah, well, it was the only one left. So they were kids were snagging them like they were the hottest thing in the world at that time. And so I still actually, I know you find this hard to believe, but I still own that very action figure.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me at all.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I want to say, yes, we are married. It's funny because I was giving you a tour of the new Allstate Showcase studio.
Yeah.
And the offices and everything. And I was introducing you to people. And Art Nasseri, who does all IT stuff around here, said, oh, you giving him a tour? And I said, no, he's filling in for Bill. And he said, really? And a lot of people are like, your husband's filling in for Bill? We have a history, not only being parents and having kids and being married. We met at the Loop radio station.
That's right.
You produced Jonathan Brandmeier's show, Kevin Matthews' show. Steve Dahl called you Beaver. I'm just trying to think of the things.
The line was, we all had nicknames back then. The crew that worked at the Loop. The kids who were all there. And my nickname, unfortunately, was Beave, as in Beaver Cleaver.
Why?
Because I was working in a production room, and Steve and Gary were broadcasting in the room next to me. And I think it was Gary who turned around and said, who's this guy? It was one of my very first days at the Loop. And I think Steve said, I don't know, he looks like Jerry Mathers after working the street at night.
So... you were the bad Beave.
I don't know if the mullet had anything to do with
you
it.
You had that's what attracted me to you, I'll be honest with you. I'm a fan of the mullet. That's why I like hockey so much now.
I had a little boy face, though, and that's why I think they called me Beaver Cleaver.
Maybe.
And terrible, terrible nickname, but thankfully it didn't stick. Thankfully.
I call you other things. But anyway, so we met each other in radio.
Yeah.
You've been a producer. You've been a production director at other radio stations. And we had our podcast, Snide Remarks Radio, that we did for many years.
That's right.
Which we haven't done since I started here at WGN, because I thought, you know what, all of a sudden I should put my effort into this show with Bill.
Right. I got into podcasting very early on. And with the podcasting, I wanted to talk about something I was really passionate about. And Star Wars happens to be something that I've always been really passionate about.
This is where he's like Bill, people.
Yeah.
Although Bill branches out into other toys and interests.
We're providing some of the similarities between me and Bill, for sure. And both of us are nerds, essentially. And that's the thing about growing up, our generation, our attachment to pop culture. It's sort of unprecedented as far as how people would grow up. And I find that guys around my age and a little older, you know, like around Bill's age and stuff, there's this stranglehold we've kept on to the pop culture that we grew up on.
And you don't want to grow up.
Well, I think that's it. I think
holding on to your childhood.
It's an appreciation of youth culture, which is something that I think really started in the 60s. And we're the direct result of that, for better or for worse. And also being very passionate about radio broadcasting, something I've done my whole life, I thought, wow, this is a great opportunity where I could take the two things and blend them together.
Well, now you're talking about Rebel Force Radio. I was talking about Snyder Remarks Radio, but already you're going into your Star Wars love.
Is that I dipped my toe into the pool prior to you, and at the time you were on the air, but you weren't hosting your own show, and I could tell you had a lot bottled up in you. And
oh, I always have a lot bottled up in me.
So I figured the podcast would be a great source of content, providing, you know, for you, a great way to provide content and get all of that stuff out.
But, you know, I will say this. We saved a lot of our fights for Snyder Remarks Radio, and it's still available on iTunes. We haven't done it in 4 years.
Yeah, it's been a while.
I'm still paying Libsyn to keep that up there, so it's there somewhere. And Pete Zimmerman, who produces Justin Kaufman's show, who now has jumped to the morning show with Steve Cochran, Pete Zimmerman was very excited that, oh, is this a Snyder Remarks reunion? So let's just say it's a reboot, because typically we would do it on a Sunday afternoon.
Yeah.
And usually beverages, adult bevies were involved.
Which is, you don't find typically happening in major market radio stations.
Yeah, so no, we're doing coffee and water today, so it may not be as fun, but we'll see. And speaking of Bill Leff, if you know what, let's take a quick break, and then I want to do a little tooting of Bill's horn since he's not here. And I want you to mention why I'm mad at Bill Leff, because he started you on a hobby. We'll talk about that in just a minute. But first, it is break time. Let me give you the phone number in case you don't have it, Jim. 312-981-7200. Bill Leff is playing tennis. We'll get into that in a second at 720 WGN.
All right, everybody. Get ready to get it up and get it on, because here comes the tennis song. Let's go to the tennis tournament and hit our tennis balls. Let's go to the tennis tournament and hear the linesman's calls. Forehand, backhand, volley serve. You will need a lot of nerve. Let's go to the tennis tournament and hit a ball in the grass.
That's where Bill Leff is, ladies and gentlemen, at the tennis tournament. It's the...
I hope he's playing better than that guy is singing.
Well, this, I just want to tell you the magic of the Bill and Wendy show here on 720. Yesterday, I played this for Bill, and he was both horrified and intrigued. And it's a YouTube song by a guy named Paul Treluski. It's called The Tennis Song, and it's just a dude sitting there with an accordion.
Right, right.
And I said, come on, everybody, play this song and let's make it go viral. So yesterday I took a picture of how many views were on this, and it was 18,941 views. You know how many views are there today?
18,945?
Just under. Oh! 18,944. So, Jasmine, we cannot make anything go viral because there are only 3 more views than there were yesterday.
I think it's due to the song.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I wouldn't give up on your viral dreams. I think you just need to find some better content.
Oh, come on. This was published in 2008. We're giving Paul Treluski more press than anyone.
Let's go to the tennis tournament and hit our tennis ball.
Big finish.
All right. Well, the accordion playing is not bad if you're into that kind of thing.
Well, I'm pretty excited for Bill. He is a, God, I keep saying this wrong, Illinois State finalist, right, Jasmine?
Correct. Yeah, that's
all right.
It.
In the 40-plus, correct?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
He's a little more than 40-plus, but he's playing with younger people because he wanted to be challenged. The tennis tournament is all weekend, and it's in Indianapolis. This happened 3 years ago where he went to the finals, and his daughter Reese was going away to school, and he was in a, he didn't know what to do. He was in a quandary. Mm-hmm. Do I go, you know, set my daughter up at school with my wife, or do I go to this tournament, which could be a once-in-a-lifetime thing?
Right.
He was an awesome dad. He did the tennis tournament in Indianapolis, would drive to Ohio after the tournament, then drive back for tennis, then drive back. So he did back and forth all weekend long. Mm-hmm. And he thought, you know, when again is this ever going to happen? Well, 3 years later, he finds himself there again.
Well, great.
And there was no big conflict
yeah.
to keep him from it. So we wish him well. And Paul Treluski, I believe, is going to be there today with his accordion.
Oh, he's going to make an appearance to cheer Bill on.
I think so. And I always tease Bill for many reasons, actually. Mm-hmm. But I tell him that it's his fault that we have a Star Wars room in our house.
It is. It really is.
What, how did this happen? I can't even remember this.
A lot is Bill's fault, actually. I met Bill, I was working on a show called The Sunday Funnies on The Loop with Brian McCann, who went on to be Conan O'Brien's writer for a long time.
Naughty Kitty.
Right. And he, you know, brought in a lot of his fellow stand-up comedians from the local community, and Bill was one of them. And Bill came up and started talking about his toy collection and all of these action figures. And I naturally said, well, do you have Star Wars in there? And he said, oh, yeah. And,
started, and he has everything, just to
he
clarify.
Does. He really does. He could open a museum, legitimately. He could open a toy museum. He has such an amazing collection. And so I was talking to him about this, and I hadn't, at this point, I hadn't seen my old Star Wars figures from when I was a kid. They were still boxed up in my parents' house. My mom sold a lot of stuff in garage sales, but she always knew that the Star Wars stuff was important to me and my brother, so she held on to it, thinking that maybe someday the grandchildren would like to play with it. Little did she realize that I became absolutely obsessed with these things after meeting Bill, and Bill telling me about sort of the organized hobby around it and everything, and then he started working with you, and I got to know him better, and we got invited to his famous Christmas party, and included in the Christmas party is a tour of Bill's toy collection, which took up two rooms in
his
condominium.
And this is the first Christmas party, by the way, that I didn't see you with a cocktail. You were so obsessed with the toys.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It was quite, like I said, it's museum quality. The displays and the cabinets and all of these things I never saw before since I was a kid or didn't even know existed. So when we got our own house.
You and Bill?
No, that'll be coming up probably at some point in the next decade.
When you guys get kicked out.
When we both get
thrown
out.
And Terry and I say that's enough.
Realize we're the only two people who could actually tolerate each other. But when we got our own house, I targeted a room in that house. And I just went for a closet in that room. Remember,
yeah.
I put shelving in a double door closet that you could walk into. And it was like, oh, cool. Look at this little private area here where
of
he
Star
keeps
Wars figures all arranged in various scenes from different movies.
He keeps all of his nerdy, geeky stuff. But then, as the movies started coming back, Star Wars became a big pop culture thing again, heavily marketed, heavily manufactured as far as the collectibles go. And it just spilled out from the closet and took over the whole room.
And our boys had to share a bedroom so you could have that. And now Dylan has like this tiny little baby room, and Michael still has bunk beds. We got to get that taken down. And you have like the best room of the house is the Star Wars room.
But it's okay because the kids have always known it to be that way, and they think it's special. They think
it's
kind
special.
Of interesting.
It's special.
But, you know, they love and appreciate it, and it's something that I've really gotten a lot of fulfillment out sharing with them. So
I show it off. I know I make fun of you, but like whenever the bug guy is there or something, it's like, check this out. And I bring him to the Star Wars room, and then I'm like, wait, the piece de resistance. Uh-huh. And I open up the closet door, and wow, lo and behold.
Yeah. So if anyone would like a tour.
No.
Oh.
Very briefly, because we have to take a break, we have Todd Rundgren tickets to give away.
Yes.
And you just saw Todd Rundgren with our son, Michael.
Right.
And a listener actually took a picture of the back of your heads and posted it on Facebook.
Oh,
do you remember that?
Yeah, that's not too creepy. But it was a great show. Todd Rundgren and Utopia at the Chicago Theater earlier this year.
All right, well, this is just solo Todd Rundgren, an unpredictable evening with Todd Rundgren. Was it unpredictable then?
Absolutely, because I don't really know his music or anything.
You don't? Yes, you do.
Not really. I'm not a hardcore fan, but I really thought he'd put on a great show, and the guy is showing no signs of slowing down.
All right, well, Todd Rundgren is going to be at the Silver Creek Event Center at Four Winds Casino, New Buffalo, on September 14th. It's your entertainment escape. You can get your tickets at Ticketmaster.com today. And I had you give your little review of Todd Rundgren because you said our son Michael loves him. You were not so much, but you still had a great time. So whoever wants to go see An Unpredictable Evening with Todd Rundgren, let's just do lucky number 7. The 7th caller right now, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200, caller number 7. We'll take a break. We'll check out some news with Steve Bertrand. And then we're going to talk about parenting. Can we do that?
Yeah,
all
yeah,
right.
That's one thing we can talk about.
Bill Leff is playing tennis. Jimmy Mack in his chair today. I'm Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN.
Teach your children well. Their father's hell did slowly go by.
Thank you, Steve. Bill Leff is playing tennis today, and we wish him well in his tournament. Jimmy Mack is sitting in his chair today. Jim, thanks for coming in.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here. These new studios are really amazing. Really amazing.
All right. I'm Wendy Snyder, and Steve Bertrand, you can stick around as well if you don't mind on this. There's a story in the news. I don't know if you've been covering this, Steve. I got to be honest with you. I haven't listened to every word out of your mouth.
What?
Most of them. But there's a story. There's a kid, an 8-year-old Wilmette girl, who takes her dog for a walk around the block. Her dog, Marshmallow. And an anonymous caller calls the police, and after seeing this girl walking the dog alone, and all of a sudden this little 8-year-old comes home, maybe someone, one a friend of hers or something is going to be on the front porch, but no, the police are waiting for her because this anonymous caller called the police, and I guess now the mom is in trouble for letting an 8-year-old walk a dog around the block.
Well, I think the police showed up and they said, yeah, there's really nothing here. You know, we shouldn't have been called perhaps, but because they were called on that type of a situation, they automatically have to contact.
Report it to DCFS.
And so DCFS, by law, has to investigate it.
Isn't that what ridiculous?
What is the crime here? What is the
problem? Well, now, see, this is the thing. Like, I, you know, we tease that there are neighbors like Gladys Kravitz from Bewitched, where it's a neighborhood watch. Come on, Steve. You know how many times Jim does not like me to walk around the neighborhood because I find a suspicious package.
So Gladys now speaking as Gladys.
I guess, maybe. But I would never call, first of all, I would never call the police on an 8-year-old kid walking a dog. Now, there are some things you have to take into consideration. We have a puppy who pulls a lot. I am older than 8 years old and bigger than an 8-year-old, and that dog pulls me pretty much. So an 8-year-old might be tugged down the street. If you have a huge dog that an 8-year-old may not be able to handle, I can see that. But still, do you call the police on a little kid walking a dog?
Well, gosh, no, of course not. Unless there is a situation where the dog is doing some damage to property or running loose. And
there are, I would call the police more on, there are a lot of people, some that I know and some that I don't, who have their dog without a leash. And granted, their dog is pretty well trained.
Mm-hmm.
I have a friend whose dog is so well trained. I mean, this dog sat on Dearborn in front of Harry Carey's and people were walking by. That dog didn't move.
Mm-hmm.
I have another friend whose dog is pretty well behaved, but every once in a while, it's a dog. There's a squirrel. They run.
Mm-hmm.
And I think every dog should be leashed.
But what is the problem here with an 8-year-old walking the dog?
Well, Corey Wyden is the mother, and she said, for something like this to happen to me, there's something really wrong. She agreed to let her 8-year-old daughter and her 17-year-old son get the Maltese puppy. Maltese are pretty little. Again, the dog's name is Marshmallow. Need I say more? They got the puppy last year, and as long as everyone agreed to take turns walking the dog. So Wyden, who asked that her daughter's name not be used, of course, because this is embarrassing and silly, said the girls walk around the block, most of which Wyden says she can see out of her windows, is the only time her homeschool daughter is unsupervised. So the mom says, I'm kind of a joke with my friends because my kids are around me all the time. So she lets an 8-year-old go out and walk the dog. And I don't understand this.
But don't 8-year-olds have freedom to go out and walk dogs? I'm just trying to understand what the complaint was, why the cops deemed it necessary to show up at the house.
Well, because someone called.
But I can
Why
call
did that person
say,
call?
Well, I can call and say, hey, I saw my neighbor walking his dog the other day, and the cop would be like, well, so what? I don't understand because
well,
it's
I think
a child.
The call was that the person might have thought the kid was being neglected or might have been in danger on
or maybe home alone and walking it. And that's the thing. This is not a unique story. Mothers in the Chicago area and across the country have found themselves at the center of investigations by police or child welfare officials after their children were spotted alone but unharmed. Steve,
but
wasn't
if you're
there...
really worried about the child's safety, you think the first step would be just to go out and talk to the child.
Yeah, I guess instead of call the police. But it just it irritates me so much that DCFS, they have to be called. So then I thought about it, Jim. We have kids. They're now almost 16 and 19. And we have had to leave them home alone certain times. You know, if we're going to work and when Dylan was younger, if he was homesick, you know, I'd call and check in. But there were times that we had to leave him home alone. And I guess we're in violation of the law because I was curious as to the age that you, the legal age in Illinois where you can leave a kid home alone. You can't leave anyone. You have to be 14 to be unsupervised at home. We have left our kids under 14. So we're scofflaws.
But aren't children allowed to go outside and walk on sidewalks with or without dogs?
I guess that is a different
situation.
Without
constant parent supervision? When we were kids, we would go out the front door at the crack of dawn and not come back home until it was time for dinner.
I know.
Aren't kids allowed to go outside?
That's a great question. That because I guess when I looked up the law of leaving a kid home alone, that's different than a kid walking a dog. Esther's called us, 312-981-7200. Just kind of confused about this. Esther, what do you think?
I think that I would have checked to see where the child came from and talked to the parent because it wouldn't be about the dog. It would be about the safety of an 8-year-old child because the way things are now, they aren't like they were back in the day.
Yeah.
There are too many things happening to young people, and they look up and they disappear. That's what I'd be concerned about. And I'd check with the parent. You know, when I grew up, I could go off and stay for hours. I'd be okay, but not anymore.
That's true.
And that's my thought. Check with the parent, you know, talk to her. Hey, you got your little 8-year-old girl out here, and all kinds of things could happen to her. And it's not in any particular neighborhood. It's all over the United States.
You're absolutely right. And my dad died when I was 10, so a lot of times at like 12 years old, I had a key. I came home and let myself in after school. And I guess it depends on the kid, but you're right. Don't call the police. Find the parent and just say, hey, is everything okay? Even that is kind of intrusive, though, don't you think?
I mean, I'm just confused.
Well, it could be, but, you know, it's better than letting that child be out there alone and 2 hours later she's wondering where her daughter is.
I guess. Esther, we thank you so much for calling. I know you listen all the time. We appreciate talking to you.
We're talking about 8-year-olds here.
Yeah,
we're
thank you.
Thanks, Esther.
Thanks, Esther. We're talking about 8-year-olds here. We're not talking about 3-year-old kids. You know, I mean, an 8-year-old kid, I see kids walking to school every day, 8 years old and even younger, by themselves. Should I be calling the police about
no,
that?
No, and don't start. I'm the one that usually calls the police. You don't get to take my job. Listener Bill has called us. Hey, Bill, what's going on?
Hey, I hitchhiked home from a baseball party when I was 6 years old with my 9-year-old brother in 1967. But this isn't the same planet as that was back then. You know, if you saw an 8-year-old hitchhiking, eight-year-old girl hitchhiking, would you call the police at that point?
Well, yes.
Yeah, because that's an obvious red flag. So
the neighbor may not have felt comfortable enough going over and getting into an argument with a neighbor about what's permissible. You know, what's wrong with the police coming by and checking? And now they know about it, right? So it's documented. The police know, okay, they let their 8-year-old wander the neighborhood. I have no problem with that at all. You're erring on the side of safety. Well, you know, the opposite side of that would be just ignoring it, which is what 99.9% of the people would do. And it sounds like, you know, that's what I'm hearing on the radio is, you know, it's none of your business, stay out of your business,
no,
and then a kid disappears.
And Bill, I don't mean that, but it's one thing to see a little 8-year-old walking with a knapsack on her back or something,
yeah,
or,
sticking,
you know,
her
one
thumb
of those hobo sticks or
trying
something.
Trying to wave down truckers to give her a ride.
But
I
it's
mean,
a
that's
kid
a different
walking
thing.
A dog. I that wouldn't be an instant red flag to me.
No. And
I have a 13-year-old and a 6-year-old daughter, and there's no way I would let them walk to school by themselves. And, you know, I know I don't live in Wilmette, but regardless, you hear about kids disappearing every day, single day. This is not the same world that we grew up in.
The world has changed, Bill. I appreciate that.
But also, I think we have
calling.
A responsibility as citizens to inform law enforcement when there really is a legitimate problem, because the resources are so limited, you could be pulling cops off a beat where something actually is happening. You know,
yeah,
somebody
but that
could
shouldn't
be
make you not call. If you see something, say something. I know if you see something, you tell me. I know that's how you do it. It just seems crazy. What are your thoughts on this? I think you know ours. 312-981-7200. 8-year-old walking a dog in Wilmette. An anonymous tip from a neighbor brings the police to their door. Since the police came, activity had to be launched by the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services, which is so frustrating because here's a poor mom trying to do a good job, and now she is being investigated by DCFS. 312-981-7200. It's Jimmy Mack. It's Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN. 312-981-7200 is the number to call. Jimmy Mack is sitting in for Bill Left today. I'm Wendy Snyder. Wilmette mom investigated for letting her 8-year-old walk the dog around the block, and she's baffled. Why does this happen? We have people who want to talk about it, and I believe Dave is on the line. Dave, how are you?
Doing good. How are you?
All right, what do you think about this?
I think common sense needs to kind of prevail here. Now, I don't live in Chicago. I live out west of Chicago in a small town of about 800 people. I have a daughter who's 14 now, and she is maybe 8 or 9. Somebody called DCFS and reported unsupervised child abuse and neglect type of thing, because our daughter was playing along the side of the street outside of our house. Now, I don't know if you've heard of Lake Wobegon on NPR, but
yeah.
our town is kind of like that. You could stand out in the middle of Main Street all day without having to worry about getting hit by a car. I mean, it's a safe town. And I understand Wilmette is probably pretty safe, too. Now, you know, we had to go through this whole process of the anxiety of, oh, no, we're being investigated and talking to DCFS worker and all that, because somebody reported our daughter playing outside of our house, unsupervised. Well, you know,
somebody called the police on you, or called DCFS about that?
They called DCFS and said that we were neglecting our child by allowing her to be outside unsupervised. Well, she's like 8 or 9 years old, you know.
Mm-hmm. Listen,
and when I was a kid, you know, we would walk to the grocery store 12 blocks away when we were 7, you know?
I know, and Dave, I totally realize that, and times are different now, but, you know, someone texted and said, perhaps we should talk to the anonymous tipster, but they want to remain anonymous, and find out what their motive was for calling. If they were genuinely concerned, but some other person texted and said, what if that 8-year-old was on their bike going through the neighborhood? Would somebody call the police on that? Something to think about. Dave, thank you so much for calling. We appreciate it. Suzanne wants to talk to us as well, if that's cool. Hi, Suzanne. How are you?
Hi. Doing pretty good. A couple of points on the thing is that they shouldn't have gone ahead and just called. That, you know, that was, you know, because of that, you know, kid being out there walking. And, you know, how many of those kids walk to and from school and nobody has a problem with that? And it's like the previous caller mentioned about how years ago, like when I was 8 and my sister was 10 going on 11, we lived in Grand Haven, and we went from our house that was on one side of town all the way down to the Lake Michigan beach. Mm. And, you know, it's like, I think part of the problem of this woman is not so much a safety issue as, speaking as a homeschooling mom myself, that I am wondering if the homeschooling mom was targeted because of being a homeschooler. A lot of people.
There's a lot of prejudice against homeschooled kids, the parents and the kids. I agree with that, Suzanne.
Have you ever had to deal with anything like that, Suzanne?
Oh, yeah. And it was totally unfounded. And when the DCF thing showed up, and they found out that it was, like, totally bogus. If this woman was just trying to cause trouble, then and they realized the problem really wasn't there, then they were, like, kicking the thing out. But you had to go through all this stuff with my son, having to go to the hospital to be examined to make sure there's no bruises on it. I mean, ridiculous, just because they didn't like that I was homeschooling.
And I hear this all the time, like when a kid is in trouble, I don't want to bring up school shooting, but a lot of times the perpetrators, you find out, oh, they're homeschooled, and a lot of people go, oh, yeah, that's not fair. It's not fair, yep. Suzanne. We appreciate you calling. Again, it's well met. It's an 8-year-old. It's walking a dog. And really, that point I can't get past is someone who texted, if that kid was out riding their bike after school at eight, at age 8, mm-hmm. would someone call the police? Oh, there's a kid riding their bike. The police would say, okay, thank you very much.
I mean, in Wilmette, that's a pretty safe community on the North Shore. I get it. You can't put your guard down and say we're 100% safe wherever you are. But when I think of Wilmette, I think of a North Shore suburb. I went to high school in Wilmette at Loyola Academy. Never once out on the street as a kid there did I feel any fear for my safety or the safety of anyone around me.
Is it because it's a little girl? What if it was a little boy walking a dog? Would somebody have called? I'm just throwing it out there.
Well,
something to ponder, because we don't have time to discuss it. Sorry. But something to think about. Still to come on today's show, we've got Dr. Mark Hammergren coming in. He's from the Adler Planetarium. There's this ginormous, prolific asteroid that is coming earthward. We're supposed to be okay, but it could have some problems. We're going to talk television with Alexander Zalbin from Decider.com. Thank you, Steve. Bill Leff is playing in a tennis tournament today in Indianapolis. We wish him well. Fingers are crossed. It's the state champions 40 plus. Right? Yeah. 40 plus. And in his chair today, my husband, Jimmy Mack. I'm Wendy Snyder.
Oh, hello.
And before we get Alexander Zalbin on the phone, Jim, I know you listened to the show, so you've heard Alexander on with us.
Yes.
Alex, I guess, managing editor for Decider.com. It's a great website. I got to tell you, last night we did our catching up on Big Brother, and I think that Jim and I and four other listeners who text me when I talk about it are the only fans of that show. I'm sorry. I love it.
It's killing it this season, I think. I mean, that I don't watch it, but
right.
I do read the news about it. It seems like Zingbot really zinged a bunch of people this year in particular.
Let me explain for people who don't watch Big Brother, just very quickly. It's a group of people. Is it 12 people that get together in a house? They don't know
16.
Each other. Okay. They're different ages, different backgrounds, different races, everything. They move in together. They have to make alliances. They have to make things work. And each week somebody gets voted out, basically. That's it in a nutshell. So it's interesting for us to watch these people get along. There are people that you just hate because they're a jerk or whatever. And then there's this robot thing that comes in called Zingbot, which as we're watching it last night, Alex, I'm like, this is the dumbest thing ever. It's just a high-pitched electrical voice from this robot, and it just slams each and every one of the remaining members of Big Brother. And it's pretty mean.
To me, and again, this is coming from somebody who's really only side-watched the show, watched it when it was, say, in an office that I was in or something like that. But the thing that I think people should understand about Big Brother is it is this very intense social experiment. And then they throw in the most bizarre elements you could think of, like a robot that just zings people, or people need to climb on these weird structures or do Survivor-style challenges where they're just standing on things for a really long period of time. I'm sure, can speak to it a lot better, but to me, that's the thing that makes the show so interesting and bizarre, is you have both of these things running at the same time, high emotions, and then the weirdest things possible.
And Alexander, I think it's a little unfair for Wendy to say that just me and her and four other people watch it, because I think it has been something of
a ratings boom
powerhouse this whole summer. It takes Thursday nights consistently, apparently. Mm-hmm. And so And I know I heard somebody in line at the Mariano's talking about it. So I know there are more people than just
five. They say if you've got Mariano's, you've got the world. That's what they always say.
All right. Well, please, listeners, Decider.com is a great website. And Alexander Zalvin is the managing editor, Decider.com. I saw this pop up in my alerts yesterday. There will be no more Jim Parsons on the Big Bang Theory. He's walking away from a lot of money.
There's going to be no more Big Bang Theory is the thing, and it's actually all because of Jim Parsons, it turns out. There were initially discussions that they were going to do at least another two seasons of the show back at the TCA tour, the Television Critics Association tour in August. They talked about it a little bit, but it turns out Jim Parsons said, no, you know what, we've done the show for, it's going to be now 12 years, they're going into the 12th season, I have all of these other things going on, I don't want to do the show anymore, and essentially walked away from what would have been an almost $50 million payday. Jeez. To say no to the show. And because he's the biggest star, they decided, you know what, we're not going to go on without him, and the 12th season is going to be the final season of Big Bang Theory.
Are you surprised about that? Because I am. I mean, they just started this young Sheldon. I'm kind of surprised it's not going to take another lap around the sun.
It's pretty shocking, mostly because ratings have changed a lot over the past couple of years with the advent of streaming, with the bifurcating of TV, but by any standards, Big Bang Theory is an enormous hit. It's now the number one show on television, not just the number one comedy, but the number one show on television, and CBS at least says internationally as well. So that Jim Parsons would walk away from that, and that CBS wouldn't say, we're going to give you $100 million, we're going to give you $150 million, whatever he wants to keep him on the show. Obviously, that ratchets things up for the rest of the cast considerably, but that's a big change for CBS. Now, granted, they have a lot of other shows going that are also huge. As we already talked about, Big Brother actually is really huge, even if you say a lot of people don't watch it. They have SWAT, they have Bull, they have NCIS's and all of these procedural shows. But still, Big Bang Theory is a cornerstone comedy for the network. So to say goodbye to it is going to be a very big change after this year.
And this is a show that's been around for a long time, obviously has a huge fan base. Do you think that a guy like Jim Parsons will receive backlash from that fan base? Because here it is being publicly revealed that it looks like he is solely responsible for the plug being pulled on the show. Do you think he would have to worry about his reputation being damaged among his fan base?
And where does he go? Seriously, where do you go from this?
Well, the thing is, he actually has a lot of irons in the fire. And to address the backlash thing, I think even though it is the number one show on TV, it has been on for 12 years. It's slowly built up to that level. So it's definitely going out as a high point. He still provides a voice, Wonder Years style, on Young Sheldon. So it's not like he's leaving the network or anything. But he has a lot of producing credits that are going on. I think he does want to do different types of dramas and different types of comedies. And frankly, whatever you think about Big Bang Theory, Jim Parsons is a talented comic actor. So I think we're going to see him do a lot of other things, and I do think the fan base is going to follow him.
All right, we are going to continue talking television with Alexander Zalbin, managing editor of Decider.com. A couple of texts have just come in. So now there are six fans of Big Brother.
See?
The lady at Mariano's and Nick DiGilio, who does overnights here.
I told you.
Alexander will continue in a moment. Bill Leff is out playing tennis. He's in a tennis tournament. We wish him well. Jimmy Mack in his chair today. I'm Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN.
Welcome to television's unchallenged authority.
All right, that's not Robin Leach. Robin Leach is welcome to the rich and famous.
Robin had one of the greatest accents, and everyone would always want to impersonate him. And what was his famous catchphrase? Champagne wishes and caviar dreams. Hey, see, that's not bad.
We should have just let you do it. Alexander Zalbin on the line with us, managing editor from Decider.com. It did just come over this morning. Robin Leach, host of Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous and celebrity columnist, has died at the age of 76. Bill and I got to interview him. He was super nice, really a fun guy.
He had kind of an amazing career, and it's really sad to hear that he went. He actually started off as a newspaper guy for a really long time, and I believe he said that's really all he wanted to do. You know, his whole plans were just to write for newspapers, and that's pretty much it. But he ended up helping launch Entertainment Tonight, which revolutionized entertainment coverage on TV, spun off Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous from that, and that it arguably helped launch reality TV as we know it. You know, it wasn't exactly the same thing, but having that, I can't really see you having a Kardashians or most of Bravo's programming, frankly, without Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous. So it's sad news, but he was also almost 77.
Alex, almost 77. To me, that is not old enough. People are living into their 90s and 100s.
Sure. Yes. No, that's true. I don't want to be the arbiter of how old people should be or anything like that. And he actually appeared recently on the massively, sadly, unwatched Great News. He had a two-episode arc on that. So if you want to watch something that he did recently is 2017, you can go to take a look at that. He was on two episodes.
What is that called that he was on?
Great News. It was a show done by Tina Fey after 30 Rock. Really good show. We actually, I think, weirdly just had an article go up on Decider from one of our writers, Brett White, saying how Great News is massively criminally underviewed. Andrea Martin was on it. Nicole Richie, speaking of Nicole Richie, probably wouldn't have had a career without Robin Leach.
Right. Oh,
Robin Leach, what a great gig he had. And I know it was a great gig because when I think of him, the first thing I picture in my mind is he's sitting in a hot tub with a glass of champagne and a couple of buxom blondes on either side.
Yeah.
You know, and if that's the sort of reputation you have because of your job, then God bless you, you know.
Our editor-in-chief, Mark Graham, was dropping a bunch of things in our work Slack, not to get too nerdy about work stuff, but just with pictures of Robin Leach from Getty. He met with everybody, absolutely everybody. You know, just there is not a single celebrity from A-list to Z-list that you can't find him in a picture with. It's insane.
All right. Big changes for Netflix and their Marvel shows. Tell us about that.
Yeah, this is a really good article written by one of our editors, Megan O'Keefe. There was a big shakeup in terms of the show Jessica Jones, which I don't know if you guys watched. The first season was pretty excellent of that. It was created by a lady named Melissa Rosenberg, who also helped usher the Twilight movies into reality. She is leaving after season two. She is now going to work for Warner Brothers TV, who does a lot of the CW superhero shows, as well as a ton of other shows. But it's a big shakeup, and it definitely points to a change in the way that Marvel's Netflix shows, which were really a cornerstone of Netflix for a while, might potentially be changing. We have Disney is buying Fox and launching their own streaming service, so there's a lot of question marks there in terms of Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, Iron Fist, what is going to happen with them next. Basically, we'll have to wait and see. You know, there's not going to be any changes immediately. There is going to be another season of Iron Fist that's coming in September. There's going to be more seasons of Daredevil and Punisher, at least, are in the offing. So they're not going anywhere anytime soon, but certainly there are going to be some changes coming down the pike.
And Bewitched is coming back, being rebooted, should we say?
Yes. Yeah, this is an actual real reboot. This is from Kenya Barris. It's going to be the last show for ABC before he leaves for his Netflix deal. And there's a bit of a twist on it. He is giving it, making them an interracial couple. And Samantha is a hardworking black single mom, I believe is the log line, who is a witch. She marries Darren, who is a white mortal who happens to be a bit of a slacker. And she finds out that black girl magic is no match for being a tall white man in America with a full head of hair. That's the pitch behind it, which I think is kind of brilliant. It's certainly going to be hot button, which is something that Kenya Barris really likes to do with Blackish and Grownish and his other shows. And I think it'll be fun. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing that. I wonder who's going to be Mrs. Kravitz, because I would like to volunteer for that that role.
All right.
And I've talked to you about this before. I love Preacher. I really do. And my son Dylan, my youngest son, who's almost 16, is the one who turned me on to it. And my 19-year-old Michael just started watching it. So I've begun at the beginning again, which is kind of when you really love a show and you rewatch something, you do pick up some things. I forgot the great role that Jackie Earle Haley plays as Mr.
Yes.
Ken Cannon. And I just want to mention this to my husband. Maybe you should watch it, because there's a moment in that show, in Preacher, where he's listening to audio of cows being slaughtered while playing Q-Bert, and that is my husband's favorite game.
Oh, those are a couple of my favorite pastimes right there. Who doesn't love the audio experience of a cow being slaughtered?
That's terrible.
Just, you know, I'm going to kick off my weekend with that. So,
but the Preacher finale is coming up. I cannot wait for this, Alex.
The last episode had one of the most insane scenes that I've ever seen on television, and that's saying something for Preacher, which has had some horrific, insane scenes. But a guy exploded, and I probably can't say it on the radio, but there was one part of him left, and something fell out of that part, and it was shocking.
It was a tight fit, let's just say.
Yes, that's a good way of putting it. But leading into the finale, there's a lot of big questions. We have our three main characters are separated right now. They're all off on their own missions. One of them is literally headed to hell. Another one is going to kill his grandma, and another one is fighting some vampires. This show is insane. I don't know how they're going to bring it together in the finale. One thing that I will mention that I was a little worried about was that AMC hasn't officially picked up the show for a fourth season yet, which, heading into this finale where there's a lot of questions, could leave things on a very dangling note. But I took a look back, and the second season ended at about the same time, towards the end of August, but they didn't pick it up until the end of October. So if fans are watching it, and if they are left with a crazy cliffhanger, as I think we will be at the end of the season, don't panic yet. It doesn't mean that the show is necessarily gone. And in fact, I think AMC very much wants to continue to be in the Seth Rogen business.
Yeah.
So I think we will see a fourth season of the show.
Yeah, I don't say dangling, by the way, when we're talking about that last
episode. Oh, my gosh, yes.
Either.
Yeah, you're right. My bad.
No problem. Alexander Zalbin, thank you so much. Managing editor for Decider.com. It's a great website. You can follow him on Twitter, too, at azalbin. Thank you so much. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, you too. Thanks so much for chatting.
I love television, Jim. I really do.
You do. There's very few hot TV shows that go by you. You catch them all. I don't watch TV as much as you do.
No, because you're so busy rewatching all the Star Wars movies.
Well, you know, they're there. You know, we might as well just give them a spin one more time.
May as well. All right, quick break. We're going to do some news. And join us on the stream today, by the way. At 12 noon, we will be on the stream. Jimmy Mack in for Bill Leff. I don't know what time Bill plays in his tennis tournament today.
Oh, why do you want to call
him?
Well,
I hate to wait till Monday, and he went out there last night, so I think he is playing today, but I don't know when.
Well, I'm sure ESPN is reporting on it, probably their top story right now.
All right, well, why don't you go to ESPN.com and try and figure that out. I'm pretty worried because there's a giant asteroid that is going to zoom past our planet. Should we worry? Should we not? Dr. Mark Hammergren, astronomer for the Adler Planetarium, will be with us after the news, which is next, 720 WGN.
I am an asteroid that roams the space, a huge rock with an irregular body and face. As a leftover of a spark when the solar system was formed.
Boy, if an asteroid sounds that cute, I don't mind that it comes very close to Earth. Bill Leff is off today. Jimmy Mack is sitting in his chair. I'm Wendy Snyder, and saw in the news that there's a giant asteroid that's going to zoom past us. Whenever I find something space-related, we call the Adler Planetarium, and we have Dr. Mark Hammergren with us. Thanks for coming back, Dr. Hammergren.
My great pleasure. Great to be here.
We like having you here. This is the first time you have seen our brand-new studio, the Allstate Showcase Studio.
These are really spiffy digs here.
Mm-hmm. Pretty nice. The Adler Planetarium is also a great place to visit. You have a giant telescope, and you can tell us about this asteroid. First and foremost, what is the story?
Yeah, so, you know, spoiler alert, it's basically a non-story.
There's you're like a flight attendant. I'm looking at your face to make sure we don't have to be worried.
We really don't. This is really just press release material, just to promote the good work that NASA is doing in asteroid surveys and cataloging.
To make us feel more comfortable and safe in case there is, because this is a 500-foot-wide asteroid.
That's right, yeah, but it's not going to pass any closer than maybe a million miles away from the Earth.
Ooh.
And its orbit. Now, they call it a potentially hazardous asteroid. And that's a technical detail.
That's what scared me.
Yeah,
I saw that.
Yeah. And that means that it has to be a certain size, above maybe 140 meters, you know, so close to 500 feet across or so, or bigger, and pass within about 4 or 5 million miles of the Earth's orbit. Now, that's just to get that label potentially hazardous. Doesn't mean that it's necessarily even on a collision course or even intersecting the Earth's orbit.
All right.
Well, wait a second now, because I'm still not convinced.
Yeah.
You said the path of the asteroid is going to be how far away in proximity to Earth? A million miles?
More than a million miles.
But in space, that's just like down the block.
No, that's right. That's exactly right.
So, to give us a perspective, say how far away is Pluto from Earth? Because that's the furthest planet away.
Right, right. So Pluto is about roughly 40 times further from the sun than the Earth is. So about 40 astronomical units. So that's, multiply that by 93 million miles, and you get, billions of miles.
Billions of miles.
Billions of miles.
So in essence, this asteroid is flying right through our neighborhood. Is there anything that it could connect with that would change its course?
Well, that's what I mean. Like, you know, the hurricane that's happening in Hawaii right now, weather fronts, a lot of times they change direction. Any chance that could happen?
Weather is a lot more chaotic than orbital mechanics, the things that dictate the paths of asteroids, at least on the time scales that we're talking about here. Over very long time scales, like thousands of years, yeah, their orbits are indeed chaotic. But still, we can predict where they're going to go with a very good degree of certainty, as long as our observations are good enough, out to almost 1,000 years into the future. And we know that this asteroid doesn't even intersect the Earth's orbit. Nothing is going to modify that greatly over at least the next 1,000 years. And it's not going to come any closer than about 1.1 million miles to Earth.
Now, just say it was heading straight for us.
Right.
Did you see that movie Armageddon?
I did indeed. Yeah, that's an interesting point you bring that up. I'm going to be giving a talk with the original screenwriter of Armageddon next month.
Who wrote that?
Anthony Adler?
Is that a Michael Bay film? Who
wrote Robert Roy Poole is his name.
So what they do is they send a crew out to space to intercept this. It was an asteroid, right? And it was flying toward the planet. So they were going to put some sort of rockets on the asteroid to change its course.
In the movie, they drilled a hole and put a big nuke on it.
Oh, that's what it was. Yeah, right. And to blow it apart.
To smithereens.
It's been a long time since I saw it. Now, I'm not a particular fan of the movie.
I know.
Movie
I can't
either.
Believe you brought up Armageddon.
Well, I just remember it. Now, is there any way, if it was heading straight towards Earth, is there any way to incorporate the technology from the 1979 Atari video game Asteroids, where we could send a little triangular shaped ship up into space?
No, we don't have any designs for something like that, and also those little pellets that it shoots
out.
Yeah,
we need those.
Quite sure what that is.
That's exactly what. So that's what I'm talking about right there, is to incorporate that technology somehow. So
yeah. So there's a lot of thought about what to do if an asteroid is coming at us.
Yeah, really. I mean, that's the most helpless situation we could possibly be.
But we have time.
Well, see, that's the thing, you know. The most important thing to do in terms of asteroid defense is find them in the first place and make sure we get plenty of warning time. I was talking about looking at the orbits and following them into the future. Ideally, we would have hundreds of years of warning about a potential impact. And that means that if we just nudge it very slightly, that distance, that difference will grow over time. It'll grow chaotically, actually, go much, much larger. And so a tiny nudge will cause it to miss the Earth.
Okay. All right. I feel better. Not 100%, but because we'd have such lead time, knowledge of that would change the course of society. And everyone would be pooling their efforts together.
It would be like a zombie apocalypse.
No, it wouldn't be. It would be a great moment because it would bring the world together
it wouldn't.
To fight this
People would be grabbing water and stuff for themselves. I think it would be a chaotic mess. We're selfish jerks sometimes.
No, but we would know hundreds of years prior.
I guess. You know, Dr. Mark Hammergren is here, an astronomer with the Adler Planetarium, and I was worried since Bill wasn't here, we wouldn't ask stupid question, but
oh, I
Jim,
got that
congratulations
covered. I got
for the
that
asteroid
covered.
Question.
I just want to make Bill F. proud. That's all I want to do.
Dr. Hammergren, do you like to play the game of asteroids? Because we go to Galloping Ghost in Brookfield, Illinois, where they have old-time video games,
yes.
And that's one of my favorites.
You know, Asteroids was one of my favorite games. Yeah. Surprisingly, that was before I really got interested in the real things. And then there's this other game, Sinistar, where you mine asteroids for crystals.
Really?
Yeah. To use to fight this monster. Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
All right. You mentioned Pluto, and you did too, Jim. So is it a planet again? Because I know that it was an ectoplanet. It was a planet when we were going to school. Uranus changed to Uranus just because everybody giggled. And then Pluto was ousted and was not a planet. And now I heard it's a planet again. What's up with Pluto?
Well, when Pluto was redefined in its category from a major planet, a regular planet, to a dwarf planet back in 2006, yeah, it was removed from the list of the major eight. But you know, my point is that a dwarf planet is still a planet.
Right.
Right. And you shouldn't say dwarf planet anymore. It should be like little planet.
I
think that's politically correct, right?
Well, ironically, I really don't like that new definition back in 2006 because they call it a dwarf planet. They invented that new category, but it is not really based on its size. It was excluded from the list of planets because it hasn't cleared its orbital region of other debris. So there are a lot of other asteroid-sized things out by Pluto's orbit. So that's the reason, not Pluto's size.
All right, that's pretty fascinating. All right, good news here. We don't have to worry about this 500-foot, was it 500-feet asteroid that was headed our way? Are you playing some music for your own listening enjoyment? Are you playing a video game?
You can't look up anything on the internet without an ad popping up, and I wasn't prepared for that. I'm so sorry.
Right. We are going to continue talking. There was something in the news about NASA, and it's funny because you mentioned this a lot of times. What was the claim? Potentially dangerous or something like that?
Potentially hazardous.
Hazardous.
Asteroid.
So in a way, that's so we can talk about NASA. I have another story that we should talk about, and we will do that next when we continue. All right, we're talking space. We should call the segment Spaced Out with Dr. Mark Hammergren, right? Hammergren, yes. Astronomer for the Adler Planetarium. It's Jimmy Mack. It's Wendy Snyder. You can follow them on Twitter and Instagram at Adler Planet. I love all your billboards about science being freaking cool and stuff, because it is. We're talking about this asteroid that's not going to hit us. NASA was the one who revealed this information. Is that where this alert came from?
Yeah, so NASA, the JPL, they catalog these objects, and they serve as kind of like a coordinating center for asteroid warnings, asteroid defense, that kind of thing.
All right, there's a NASA story in the news today, and Dr. Hammergren knows about it. Jim, you don't. There was a woman who was super excited because she got a NASA internship.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when we were trying to get into radio, if you get an internship, I don't know if you interned anywhere, Dr. Mark.
No. Not specifically, nope.
Well, it's a big thing, and yeah. This girl tweeted something out, because that's what people do on Twitter. And it said something to the effects of, everyone shut the front door, let's say.
Okay.
And she said, everyone shut the front door. I got accepted for a NASA internship. Pretty exciting.
Yeah.
So a Twitter user just responded to her and said, language.
Right.
And she pretty much went off and told this person to do things to her, and it was pretty dirty.
Right.
And it turns out that the guy she tweeted back to is the National Space Council, the National Space Council that oversees NASA.
Oh, no.
And he revealed that on Twitter. He said, you know, I am on the National Space Council that oversees NASA, and needless to say, she lost her internship.
As well, she probably should have.
You know, it wasn't his fault, and he feels really badly about it.
He does. That's what I love about it. He said, later I learned that she had lost her offer for an internship with NASA, and he felt super bad about it. He was just saying language. He wasn't trying to get her fired or anything. She got herself fired.
She did, but it was more her friends, from what I've read.
Oh,
they
now the plot
jumped on the bandwagon and kept using the NASA hashtag, along with terrible insults to this guy, Homer Hickam, who is just a legendary figure in NASA.
Oh, no.
And so, you know, NASA officials, they're going through, oh, well, let's check the social media. Who's using the NASA hashtag? What?
What?
Here's the thing. When you hashtag something, I know in your head you're thinking, because I hashtag the White Sox and say stuff. It's all good. But you never think that they're going to read it. But yes, they have someone who does that.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, a lot of people feel like they're tweets become legitimized because of who they hashtag or do the at sign,
right?
You know, and so that legitimizes their tweets and gives it a little bit more weight, but then of course it puts them right in the spotlight. And I don't think this is about NASA trying to protect the reputation of the gentleman who she was tweeting back at.
No,
it's not about that. It's about representing the company in a public fashion. In the proper way and you know, without profanity and things of that measure. It's not all free speech. You can say things like, this is my private account. It's my private account. The opinions I express here are not
represented. It doesn't matter, though.
It doesn't matter. As long as that connection is made,
yeah,
then you are a representative of the company you're working for. You are a public spokesperson if you assume that Twitter handle.
Well, I hope she doesn't apply for any kind of job at the Adler, because, you know, I'm just, what's her name, Naomi. She made her tweets private as of Wednesday, and her bio now says, taking a break from Twitter for a while.
Oh, I'm sure she is. She should just shut down her account.
Yeah, and start a new one. Dr. Mark Hammergren, astronomer for the Adler Planetarium, we brought him in because there was this giant asteroid, potentially hazardous, 500 feet in length. It's set to zoom past the Earth on August 29th. We don't have to worry. What else do you have coming up? Something that you mentioned something about Armageddon and other things. What do you have coming up?
Yeah, so there's a talk in the Science and on Film series from the Chicago Council on Science and Technology, so C2ST.org. And they're hosting a talk by myself and by Robert Roy Poole. He's the original screenwriter for Armageddon, that wonderful Bruce Willis Saves the World
movie,
you know. And we're going to be talking about, well, not only how realistic was the science or unrealistic, but what is the real story about asteroid defense, asteroid surveys, that kind of thing?
Boy, this is so timely.
And the interaction between scientists and filmmakers, because I'm on the board of a couple film companies, and I advise TV shows and films. And a lot of times there's a good attention paid to trying to get the science right when they can. But then again, it's always the story that comes first.
That's true. We have to wrap up. We're almost out of time. But my husband, Jim, hosts Rebel Force Radio, which you can find anywhere. It's a podcast about Star Wars.
You find it here on WGNplus.com.
Exactly. You have one question that can be answered in 30 seconds for Dr. Hammergren about Star Wars.
Do you think the Millennium Falcon would be an effective way to navigate through an asteroid field? Because, of course, we saw Han and Chewie fly that ship through an asteroid belt in The Empire Strikes Back. As a matter of fact, they flew into an asteroid and discovered they were actually within the belly of a space slug. Do you think space slugs on asteroids are going to cause...
You don't need to answer this question. Thank you so much for coming up. We can follow the Adler at Adler Planet at Twitter and Instagram. Facebook, you can find him as well, and adlerplanetarium.org. He's Dr. Mark Hammergren. Thank you so much for making us feel safe.
My great pleasure.
All right, quick break. We'll come back. We'll see what's coming out or what Steve Bertrand has coming up on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Jim, you and I are going to go to the stream. We've been banished to the stream.
Here we go.
It'll all happen next, 720 WGN.